Welcome back. In the endeavor for full disclosure, not only is Sarah Paretsky one of my favorite writers, she also happens to be one of my favorite people. So there. Hi, Sarah.
Mutual, Rick, mutual. I will always cherish you for
you too.
The help you gave when Courtney died.
Well, I want to talk about Courtney a little bit, a little later in this thing. This is Sarah's, not only Sarah's longtime husband, but also a muse and just a remarkable, you know, I met him in doing his obituary, and it made me so regretful that I had not been a friend of his for 40 years. That's what kind of guy he was. This new book, Sarah Paretsky, of course, famous for the V.I. Warshawski novels, famous for pioneering the female detective thriller crime writer. She founded Sisters in Crime way back in, good Lord, in like 87?
1986, yeah.
Wow. There were...
How did it get so late so early, Rick?
Sarah, when you first... You came to Chicago from Kansas and start with the notion of becoming a PhD in history. What changed your life at that point?
What really changed my life was I came to Chicago first in 1966 doing community service
for
the Presbytery of Chicago and their support of the civil rights movement in the summer that Dr. King was here. And that made such an impact on my life that Chicago just, I had never planned to live in this city. I always thought I'd be in some glamorous spot like Rome or Paris or, who knows, Pyongyang. Chicago was not in the cards for me, but that summer made me a Chicagoan.
You don't think Paris or London would have been a big leap for a Kansas farm girl, do you? You didn't think you needed
I think that I have a shot in a beer kind of personality.
I think you may have actually discovered that in Chicago. But you did fall in love with the city. You also fell in love with your husband to be. But when you started writing, it was not easy, was it, Sarah?
No, it wasn't. It was hard for a lot of different reasons. One of them was growing up in a very conservative milieu as far as women and women's voices were concerned. It was hard for me to get traction and find confidence in my own voice. And then when I actually, thanks to the help really of Stuart Kaminsky of blessed memory, when I actually finished my first book, it took a year to find a publisher.
Wow.
A lot of people did not want to publish a book set in Chicago. They just felt we were flyover country and that not enough people read in Chicago to make a book set here profitable.
Yeah, that regionalism, No one ever said people in the publishing business were bright. I mean, I have, and I'm sure you have too, learned just the opposite over the years. Some of them stumble into success somehow. Warshawski was that distinctive character couldn't have come to you, and tell me I'm wrong, Sarah Paretsky, it couldn't have come to you full-blown, could she?
No, she started with me, really. I had wanted to do this for, I want to say, 8 years.
Wow.
I had thought I wanted to create a woman investigator, and it wasn't until I was working at CNA Insurance and dealing with some of the stresses that women faced in the early days of bringing us into management and professions in large numbers, that her voice came to me. And then the evolution was slow. She, in the earliest books, I think she's a bit of a pastiche of the conventions of the noir genre. I got more confident. She came into her own.
Does she? I've often wondered, never having... My only recurring character was a joker named Dr. Nightlife, who I would sometimes use in my saloon columns for the Chicago Sun-Times and Tribune. So I never really got to know him intimately. But a character like V.I. Warshawski and you, your relationship, and I've noticed it in the work too, becomes much more. I don't know if intimate is the word I want to use, but it becomes a much closer kind of relationship, a much more sure-handed kind of relationship. Is that anywhere in the ballpark?
Well, that's a very gracious and generous thought. I think that one of the issues with having, but one of the issues with having a recurring series character is trying to keep a separation between you and her,
yeah.
And yet you don't, and so she begins to feel like a more fully inhabited part of your own interior life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. No, it sure does. And it in part, they take on, I think, some of the great characters take on a life sort of their own and wind up in some cases. How many Warshawski novels have there been? It's got to be 12, 15.
20.
Wow. They sort of take on a life of their own, and you have to, in some ways, try to control that life. Do you ever look back when, I'll never forget, I always thought Kathleen Turner was the perfect person to play V.I. Warshawski, and in typical fashion, if there's any business more screwed up than the book publishing business, it's the movie making business. That got kind of botched, didn't it?
Well, that's a very kind verb to use
yeah.
for that movie. And of course, since we're on the air.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, it's kind only because I'm on the air, because I think when we've done these conversations elsewhere, I'm a lot more blunt and use more forceful words. It just should have been a kind of ongoing franchise, not just to your benefit and the benefit of book sales, but I think to the whole kind of feminist movement. Am I making too much of that?
Well, you know, Kathleen really wanted that to be the start of a series of
yeah.
movies, or perhaps a TV series spun off it. But Disney could not make up their mind whether they really wanted to have a strong woman investigator, or whether they wanted to appeal to their kind of bottom-feeding demographic teenage boys.
I love bottom-feeding demographics. Yeah, I'll steal that from you,
yeah.
Sarah.
So they went with the second instead of the first and made a predictably dreadful movie, really. Some people have liked it, and I'm grateful for the fact that it brought them to the character. But
sure.
Hemingway famously said, if you do a deal with Hollywood, stand on the Nevada side of the California state line and let them toss money over the fence at you, but don't get closer to them than
yeah.
that.
Yeah, I mean, that town has eaten up a lot of writers. Have you ever, in the course of dealing with and writing 20 books about V.I. Warshawski, have you ever, because other best-selling authors have, I won't mention all their names, but have you ever thought to yourself, well, you know, maybe I should, how about if I create a new character?
Funny you should say that, Rick, because I did think that. I thought, I've been doing this for such a long time, and maybe a new voice. And, you know, I'm publishing this collection of short stories, Love and Other Crimes, and mm-hmm. in it are two short stories about characters that I thought might make a new series. One
yeah.
was a forensic engineer, and one was a Chicago police officer. But I somehow, you know, I think that the stories are competent, and the one about the forensic engineer, actually, I had a good time writing that because she has a hippie mother who's never really come back from the ashram.
Right.
they just didn't engage me emotionally the way V.I. does.
Yeah.
I think in some ways I'm a very selfish, or, you know, I don't know what quite the right adjective is. Self-indulgent, I guess, not selfish.
Well, I wouldn't. I would never.
Well, as a writer, I am.
Yeah.
That I can't write to the market. I have to write for what really engages me.
Well, in a way, you've been very lucky that way, because what engages you has engaged millions of other people. Well, before we get deep into the new collection, which is entitled Love and Other Crimes, it's a collection of stories. And the amazing thing, I could not buy a copy of the book. I rarely, if ever, except press, read electronically. I can't stand it. How are you about that? I have read it.
Well, I'm with you.
There's nothing.
It's not in paper and I need it, I do read it on my device. But
yeah, same here. There's something, I don't know, maybe we could collaborate on some kind of treatise about why it doesn't work as well, why you can't curl up with your iPad. But I did read it that way because it's not yet, I think it becomes available momentarily in print and you can get it. And I want to get into very much, you have written some short stories over the years and you have veered off. One of the most important books, I think, on the Sarah Paretsky bookshelf, and I remember it incredibly well, is I kind of must have been 10 years ago, maybe a little more, Writing in the Age of Silence, which was, it was a memoir, and it was incredibly moving to me, Sarah. That I'm not going to say it's your best book because I've cuddled up with Warshawski any number of times. That must have been a hard book for you to write.
Yes, I think that when you expose yourself constantly, as you yourself know, that
sure,
every time
sure.
you put pen on paper, you're exposing yourself. But a memoir is a particular kind of exposure. People have asked if I would write, like, Catch Me Up Now that I'm in my 70s, and I'm not sure that I have anything new to say. I don't know.
Well, see, for all of your self-affessed self-indulgent, you're still tremendously and attractively self-effacing, Sarah Paretsky. We got to take a 2-minute break. We'll come back and talk specifically about the newest collection, Love and Other Crimes, a collection of stories. We'll be back with Sarah Paretsky. Welcome back. Sarah Paretsky's latest book is titled Love and Other Crimes. It is a collection of stories. Sarah, you have written short stories before, but you are not known as a short story writer. What was that? Chicago Noir? What was that book? Something like Chicago Noir.
Yes.
You had a story in there. I think I may have written the introduction for that book. I don't remember.
Exactly,
but,
yes.
But what, talk to me, if you could, about the difference between writing a novel, we talk for the next 5 hours, a novel and a short story. What dictates that short story length? Do you have to sort of conceive of it in your head and be very guarded with your narrative?
You know, Edgar Allan Poe wrote an essay on composing short stories, and he said the important thing was creating the right mood. And I think that that's what makes me not a good short story writer on the whole, because I'm very plot.
Yeah,
obsessed.
Plot. Sure.
And you can't have a big plot in a short story.
Interesting.
So Dorothy Salisbury Davis, who not enough people know her work anymore. She was a Chicago writer,
mm-hmm.
but died about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, she wrote great short stories because she really understood how to create that mood and capture that mood and keep you focused on one thing. One of the things that dictates for me writing a short story is it a subject that really I just have a few things to say about, or is it a subject that I have a ton of things to say about?
Right. So you did not, in the collection in Love and Other Crimes, short stories, it's a wonderful book, ladies and gentlemen, and each story gives you something. They are all loosely on the theme of love and what love can do to upset you and destroy you and make you drive you mad and drive you happy, I suppose, for a longer review. I like the form, but I guess, again, sir, it's like one of these, unless it was you, the short story collection is not on top of the list of every publisher's dream, is it?
No, and that's a sadness to me. I love reading short stories, as a matter of fact.
Me too.
But the market for them has shrunk dramatically over the last 20 years. You know, I collected my VI short stories in the 90s in a collection called Windy City Blues, and that came out in paperback and soft cover, trade paperback, hardcover. But now, no, I'm lucky that Morrow wanted to publish this in print at all, because a lot of times now short stories just go straight to electronic printing, and you can't.
Well, and also
get your hands on a paper copy.
And also the number, you think back to the glory days of not just the New Yorker, but the Saturday Evening Post, and the real glory days of the short story, where, you know, John O'Hara and Scott Fitzgerald and Ernest Hemingway. And I mean, that was the venue for the short story. I hope you have great success with this book. You must now be in the era of having to do interviews and readings and presentations via Zoom, aren't you?
Yes, I know. It's really...
I think
all of us are pretty sick of the Zoom cocktail party.
I cannot stand it. Well, the only Zoom cocktail party I've done since this whole thing started was with some old friends from high school, and I literally was as drunk as I can ever remember being, because I'm sitting at home.
Oh, my God, that is pretty drunk, Rick.
I know. Thank you so much, Sarah. But I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute, I've got ice, I have a full bottle of bourbon, and no one is charging me. So, and these are people I've known. These people, no matter what I do, these people cannot be mad at me because I've known them for 50 years. So
right. That
was my only Zoom experience. I find it awkward. I've done some formal interviews necessarily on via Zoom, and find it awkward. What do you think?
Well, one of the problems with Zoom, there are two problems with Zoom for me. One is the audio quality really suffers.
Yeah.
And the other is I can't stand looking at myself. I'm so glad we're doing this on the phone and not on FaceTime.
Oh, stop that. Stop that.
No, but don't you think, there you are, you're staring at your own face.
Yeah,
He or he, please go away.
No, and I'm not terribly vain. I don't care what I look like 90% of the time, but I'm thinking, wow, the lighting in this room is really bad. I look like I'm 95 years old. Not only am I drunk, I look like I'm 95 years old. This is not the way I want to present. This is not the way I want to present. Sarah, could you talk to me a little about Courtney? You must miss him terribly. This was Sarah's late husband, who died in November of 2018, and he seemed like the perfect man for Sarah.
Well, he was in a lot of ways. I mean, he wasn't perfect. He had his little flaws.
Oh, sure.
We all, but you're right. I do miss him terribly. And I think more sort of with COVID and being home alone, it's like every decision I make, I'm looking over my shoulder thinking, oh, Courtney, we have to repaint all of the... The dog and I have to repaint all of the windows in the house, and I'm thinking, Courtney, he always chose stuff like that. He had way better color sense than I do, and I'm like, oh, this is not going to go well.
And he also was kind of your first reader too, wasn't he?
He was, and I've never had the, I don't know, the courage or the luck or the skill to find someone who I trusted to read my stuff. You know, Courtney was in high energy physics. He came to Chicago as a protege of Enrico Fermi. He would not constantly, but every now and then try to explain relativity to me. And I understood, there were three times when I understood it. I was like, wow, it's so exciting, it's so thrilling. And then I'd instantly forget. But he would follow my career. He paid attention to what I did. He helped me with my work. And I always felt it was very lopsided that I could not tell him anything about atom smashing, but he could help me with my writing.
Well, I remember meeting him at a number of literary events where he always, you know, he allowed you to take center stage and did it in a way where you could sense a man who was very assured of himself and in love with you. There's something you told me a long time ago. You said about him, Courtney taught me to love dogs, to use chopsticks. He gave me the courage to find a public voice in writing and in speaking. That is about as good as it gets, Sarah Paretsky. It really, really is.
You're right. I was incredibly lucky. And
kidding. No kidding. What are you working on now? You're working on promoting Love and Other Crimes?
I'm doing some of that. I owe William Morrow, my publishers. I have a book due January 15th, and I'm on page 6.
Well, you have a lot of time on your hands, so page 6. Page
I don't know.
Six.
I'm having trouble. I think my books tend to reflect back what's going on in the world around me.
And wow.
It's both a rapidly changing landscape and also a bewildering one. And so I'm having trouble finding a path to a story in the middle
of this. I was talking to young Billy Lombardo a couple of weeks ago about writers having to necessarily either absolutely. We talked about whether writers could absolutely ignore the world in which we are traveling, changing every day at such a fast pace. And he said it would be impossible, that you could not. He thought it was impossible to sit down and write a book about, the Civil War now, because what's happening now is so overwhelming, and it's always, I think, on everybody's mind, and especially a writer's mind. And I think you just said sort of the same thing, that how do you translate it?
That's right. And I don't think you can really translate what's happening immediately around you, because it's, you're in the middle of the soup. You can't write about the soup until you've had a chance to cool it and eat it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my books are contemporary, and they are set in the world of white collar crime and in the events of the present day can't help but be very dominating. So
yeah. It'll be very interesting. I think it will be very interesting to see, next fall's, not this fall, but like next fall's.
Yeah, 21.
Yeah. I think it'll be fascinating. But I know if you're on there, I'll be the first in line to read it, because I said it this thing.
Bless you.
Not only do I.
So I'm reading, rereading Alex Kotlowitz's American Summer right now.
Oh,
which,
wow. Yeah. Which addresses another aspect of our contemporary climb here, which is in the headlines every day. Every day.
So Sarah Paretsky, that's very helpful.
I said at the beginning of this show, not only am I a great admirer, I adore you. It is great to talk to you. I want to see you one of these days when the world loosens up. And
we will.
I know we will. I know
you'll
we will.
Have bourbon and I'll have scotch and we'll have a good time.
It's like the old days. Sarah, I love you. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rick.
All right, honey. Take good care of yourself. Take care. And thank you all for listening. We had Matt Owens, who makes puppets and puts on a puppet circus every Saturday at 4 o'clock in the Lakeview neighborhood. We had on the intriguing Kirsten Gustafson, who has her second CD out. It is called Wait Until Dark. Her first CD came out in 1992. She can sing, if you were listening and heard her. It's produced by the one and only Richard Knight. We had David Fink on talking about the new podcast from the Outspoken storytelling series that goes on at Sidetracks Bar. And Devlin Camp, whose Mattachine podcast charts the history of gay and lesbian life as it is lived. It was not an easy road. It's easy to celebrate now, but man, in the old days, it was a horror. And you just heard from Sarah Paretsky, who has a new book out called Love and Other Crimes. Ben Anderson, always great in the producer's chair. Krista Flores, in the engineer's chair. You, lying on your couch or lying on your floor or drunk somewhere, listening to the radio show. I really appreciate it. We will be back next Sunday at the wonderful hour of 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. Until then, take care of yourselves. Be safe. Be well. See you next week.